If you would, please be turning with me in your Bibles over to the book of Ecclesiastes in chapter 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 4. Our approach to this book so far has been to look at it at a pretty fast pace, much faster than perhaps we've handled one of the epistles or even the Gospel of Mark as we march through it in the afternoon service. The fact is there is a wealth of wisdom that is to be found for us here in this book. But this is one of those books that going through it too slowly leads to losing the context of the book altogether. We love to go into those in-depth studies, certainly, but not when the in-depth study causes us to lose sight of the context of the book or the chapter. So for this book in particular, we're trying to move at a pretty decent pace. Now, so far as we've moved through this book, I don't think that we've found anything that is hard for us to grasp. I think Solomon speaks to us right on our level. Solomon is looking at life, and as he looks at life, he is primarily looking at life through the perspective of one under the sun. That is, as one who is living their life apart from God. And so far, what we have learned about that life is that when we live our life under the sun, when we live our life apart from God, that really life doesn't have much of a meaning. Doesn't have much of a meaning at all. And Solomon sets forth in this book basically to see it all and to do it all, only to find out in the end that all things, all people, all animal, all life just fades away. Nothing lasts. Life is fleeting. The same fate comes to the rich man as to the poor man when the preacher stands above that dirt and proclaims from dust to dust. And Solomon goes on to say that under the sun, that death itself doesn't teach you about anything that is beyond. That is to say, one does not look at a grave and think there must be something more because one is in the grave. But the fact is that man in general throughout this world looks at that tomb and still says, there must be something more. Why? Because Solomon reminds us God has placed eternity in the hearts of men. Most people on this earth, of many religions, whether it be Christianity or Buddhism or Islam or whatever it might be, believes there is something more than the cold reality of dirt. Now, Solomon in this book does give us little tidbits along the way so far of reflecting on God as he understands that life apart from God, again, has no real meaning. And he can't seem to help bringing that through at times, but that's the ultimate conclusion of the book. For now, though, he dwells mostly on life under the sun. This book is given from that futile perspective that everything is coming to an end. And if it's coming to a crashing end, then you might as well enjoy it as much as you can while you can, because nothing matters. So now that I've lifted your spirits, once again, as we turn our attention to chapter 4, I'm going to admit to you that this is probably not one of the easiest chapters to handle the way that it is divided up here. I actually, in preparation for this sermon, I listened to 5 different sermons of people that spoke about this chapter and people that are well-known and people that are less well-known. And I have to admit that most every preacher kind of went down a rabbit hole of one or two verses in this chapter that kind of best fit their ministry, so to say, whether it be talking about slavery or suicide or friendship. But I hope to endeavor just to speak about the chapter the way that it's written, and I hope I succeed in that, not dwell on anything too long in particular. So let's begin in verse number 1, and actually let's read the entire chapter. So I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold the tears of such as were oppressed, and they had no comforter. And on the side of the oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. Wherefore I praise the dead which are already dead more than the living which are yet alive. Yea, better is he than both they which hath not yet been, who hath not seen the evil work that is under the sun. Again, I considered all travail and every right work, for that for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also vanity and vexation of spirit. Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. Then went alone, and there is not a second. Yea, hath neither child nor brother, yet there are no end all his labor, neither his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity, yea, it is sore travail. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together when they have heat, but how can they be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Better is a poor and wise child than an old foolish king, who will no more be admonished. For out of the prison he cometh to reign, whereas also that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. I considered all the living which walk under the sun, with the second child that shall stand in his stead. There is no end of all people, even all that have been before him, they also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this also is vanity and vexation of spirit. And I apologize if I left out a verse or two there, because I messed up my reading here, and I think I might have missed a verse. So I apologize. You all caught on to that. We'll catch it here in a moment. So, all right, I'm back on track though. Says, let's look in verse number 1. It says, so I returned and considered all the oppressions that are done under the sun, and behold, the tears of such were oppressed. They had no comforter, and on the side of their oppressors there was power, but they had no comforter. The truth is if you've gone through this life, you've seen oppression of some type or sort. We look throughout history and we see how conquering nations would come in and they would oppress the people that they conquer. We look through history and we see people who were taken as slaves or sold into slavery, even by their parents. And we see the oppression that was there. We look in places like India or Thailand, where there are whole classes of people that are known as untouchables, who are treated differently just because of a heritage. People oppressing people. Then there are divisions and oppressions between sexes in places like the workplace. There are homes where there is oppression of one spouse or another, maybe over gender or another. There are abuses of all sorts. And Solomon is stating these things. He's not commenting on whether they are good or whether they are bad, whether the oppressions are right or wrong. He is only stating the fact that under the sun, that is apart from God, the tears of those that are oppressed find no place of comfort. There is no comforter for their souls. You remember when the children of Israel were down there in Egypt land, they were oppressed in every way. God said He heard their cries. He knew their sorrows. That's told to us in Exodus chapter 3, verse number 7. You see, they had a comforter to hear them, a comforter who came to give them liberty, where liberty had been stripped away, and where oppression was going on daily. Israel wasn't living under the sun. They were living under God. They were living under heaven. They had a hope. They had a comforter. But the man who knows not God has no comfort in his oppression, because life has no value. It has no meaning. Solomon now says something in this verse that's a little bit different. You see, he flips the script in the same verse. He says, the oppressor, the one who has the power over the one being oppressed, that the oppressor himself has no comforter. We don't usually think of it that way. We only think of the one who's being oppressed. But let me put it in maybe a way that we might understand it in today's world a little bit better. But let's just say that I am the boss of 50 employees that maybe work in a sweatshop in China. And I might make more than all the 50 employees put together, and I might drive the nicest of cars, and I might go home to the nicest of homes where they have to come to work riding the bus or walk or ride a bike, and they may have very little at home, live in shacks. But the responsibility that falls upon me to keep the 50 straight, to keep the 50 honest, to keep the business going, all of that leads to turmoil of mind. There's no comforter there. You see, you can have the nicest of homes and nicest of cars and all those things and not have rest. Even the oppressor in the end is afflicted under the sun. There is no comforter for him as well. He is trudging through life with the same futility as the one who is oppressed living under the sun. Because his life is just another day and another dollar spent with no meaning. So let's read on. It says, "Wherefore I praise the dead, which are already dead more than the living, which are yet alive." You know, when someone maybe dies a death because of cancer or maybe Alzheimer's, we often say, well, their fight is over. Their fight is over. They can rest now. And for those that are saved, let's just face it, there is rest in that. There is comfort in that. There is hope in that. But again, remember, Solomon is writing from the perspective of the person who is living apart from God. The one who thinks the boneyard is the end, whether they be righteous or unrighteous. That there's nothing more than dirt. Solomon says he looks around the world and he sees the oppression and it's all over the place. And he sees the ones that are oppressed who have nothing to comfort them. And he sees the ones who are oppressing them and they have no one to comfort them. So you know what is better than not being oppressed or being the one who is oppressing? Being dead. Being dead. Because at least when you're dead, you don't have to worry about it anymore. You don't have to worry about how someone may treat you. You don't have to worry about the deadlines and all the other stuff that comes along with being the oppressor. And on the surface, it would appear that dead men are at rest without the worry of the toil of oppression or being oppressed. In fact, what do we often find written above people's names on gravestones of old? Those three letters, R.I.P., rest in peace. And in fact, many people take their lives every year because they believe that the only peace they will ever have, the only rest they will have from the turmoil of the oppression that they're in, whether it be of the mind or physically or whatever it is to put an end to life at all, altogether, because they don't see beyond the grave. They're not concerned with the eternity that is in their heart. They only see what seems to be the end. On average, there are 160 attempts at suicide every hour in the United States, and 6 are successful because they believe death is better than living. Solomon saw it too. Verse number 3, it says, "Yea, better is he than both they which hath not been yet, who hath not seen the evil work that is done under the sun." Solomon says the only one who is better off from the person who is dead is the person who has never been born. Now, again, I have to keep saying this, just in case somebody just starts watching right now, but he's giving all of these statements from the perspective of one who is living their life apart from God. And this sentiment of being better, not even being born, is not the first time we see this in the Word of God. You remember Job when he came under the oppression of Satan, the man who lost everything that he had. Job wished for death. His wife wished death upon him. What a horrible state to be in. But in that state of mind, he wished he had never been born at all. You remember the words of Job 3:3? Let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said, there is a man-child conceived. And then in chapter 10 and verse 19 of Job, he says it would have been he would have been better off if he would have been carried straight from his mother's womb to the grave than to live the life he was living right now. And I venture to say that maybe some in this room, and certainly some that are listening, have had this same fleeting thought at some time in their life to say, you know what, I wish I'd have never been born at all. At least I wouldn't have to put up with this. The truth is if all life amounted to was just a heap of dust in the end, you'd be right. But there's much more to life than that. There's what comes next. Thank God He's placed eternity in our hearts and given us our word, His word, to know it. Leaving the first three verses, Solomon now moves from the oppressions in this life that make you want to die to another topic of futility altogether. Look in verse 4 again. It says, "And again I considered all travail and every right work, for this a man is envied of his neighbor. This is also a vanity and vexation of spirit." Our verse here is saying that Solomon looked around and he saw all the travail. That is work. He saw all the work. He saw all the labor of man. And he said, man is out there working and travailing because he wants what his neighbor has, or he wants something better. And I want you to understand, Solomon is not speaking in absolutes here. There have always been people who have lived upon this earth for centuries that have been happy with the smallest of places and the clothes upon their back and been very content at that. But he's speaking in generalities here. The fact is that most people go out shopping for a certain brand of clothing or a certain brand of purse, or drive a certain kind of car because we're trying to keep up with the pesky Joneses that seem to have all the latest gadgets, wear the finest of clothes, and drive the nicest of cars, and their homes are manicured, and their grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. Truth be told, most people believe that their neighbor is in far better shape than he is. Most people believe their neighbor is living a happier life than they are. So what do? We strive to keep up. Strive to have that nicer home, that nicer car, and maybe even that greener lawn. Solomon says there's no end to this madness. Keeping up with the Joneses never works because the Joneses never stop improving. In the meantime, what you don't see is that Mr. Jones is looking off of his porch and saying, man, those Smiths next door, they really got their act together. They've really got it made over there. If only I didn't have all of this stuff, I wouldn't have to work so much and be stressed all the time to pay for it all. And then, maybe then I could come home a little bit earlier, unwind a little more, enjoy my family a little more. Eat those kind of steaks like I smell on that charcoal grill coming from the Smith's house that smell so much better than the ones on my $1,000 propane grill that I can grill in 10 minutes. Sure, I got the brick pizza oven, but who uses it anyway? Domino's delivers. Solomon says everybody's chasing something because they're envious over the Joneses or the Smiths, and if it's not the neighbor next door, it's the neighbor on the next few blocks that you drive past every day and go, man, he's got it made. That's what I want. Solomon says it's just vanity. Just chasing the wind. And in verse number 5 it says, "The fool fadeth his hands together and eateth his own flesh." The last verse is the one who works, works, works to keep up with the neighbors to have what they have. And in this verse we are presented with the fool that will not work at all. That is what is meant by the one who foldeth his hands. He won't put his hands to toil or labor. Now the fact is in the days of Solomon that if you wouldn't work, then you did not eat. You were reduced to a life of begging or perhaps thievery. But there was no way to get food stamps. There was no way to go to the food banks. There was no way to draw a check. You didn't work. You didn't live. So Solomon is juxtaposing two groups. The ones that work all the time and aren't happy, and the ones who won't work because they have nothing. And guess what? They're still not happy. Both extremes lead to unhappy ends. There has to be a better way than that. There has to be a better way than that, even under the sun, right? And that's Solomon says in the next verse, there's at least some hope here, right? Even under the sun there's hope for this pattern. He says, "Better is a handful with quietness than both hands full with travail and vexation of spirits." Now I dwelt a lot on this verse this week. And I love this verse. And I'm going to read it to you from a couple of dynamic translations of the Word of God. And I usually don't do that. I usually stick for a more literal, but sometimes it's hard for us to grasp what something is saying when it's very literal in nature. So I'm going to read to you a couple of others, and maybe perhaps you'll get it a little bit more. Verse number 6 in the CSB, or the Old Holman, says, "Better one handful with rest than two handfuls with effort and a pursuit of the wind." Or the NIV says, "Better one handful with tranquility than two handfuls with toil and chasing after the wind." What Solomon is teaching us is something that transcends location. It transcends time. It's as much for us today as it was then. But he says, it's better to have less and to have peace than to have everything and anxiety to go along with it. Because you can't handle it. You can't afford it. You can't, whatever it might be. In Proverbs, Solomon says in verses 8 and 9 of chapter 30, "Remove far from me vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain." Riches are not the answer to the good life. We've seen that over and over again. Oftentimes brings more trouble. Oftentimes brings people to more self-reliance rather than relying on God. But truly going the other way of having nothing is not the answer either. But somewhere in between is what Solomon calls food that is convenient for me. The one handful of quietness, tranquility, rest. That is what we should be striving for on this earth. Not the biggest and the best, but not life in the shelter either. Somewhere in between, where we can be content with what we have rather than worrying about what we don't have. Surely that's the teaching of the New Testament too, right? Godliness with contentment. It's great gain. Solomon continues in this thought of one living under the sun, toiling for the best in life and strife in the next verse here. It says, the next couple of verses we'll read. It says, verse number 7, "Then I returned and saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother, yet is there no end of all of his labor. Neither is the eye satisfied with riches. Neither saith he, for whom do I labor and bereave my soul of good? This is also vanity. Yea, it is sore. It is a sore travail. This is a sad statement that Solomon makes about the one who is striving for all manners of earthly goods so much that he never has time to take a wife. Or if he had a wife, loses her along the way. Never had time for kids, or perhaps worked so much that the kids went away. He has no brothers. He works all of his life to satisfy his soul, and his soul is never satisfied because there's always more to have. And yet in the end, he has no one to leave it to. It's the ultimate dissatisfaction in life, isn't it? To work all your life and not have anyone to share it with. And then the government takes it all. That's the ultimate dissatisfaction. Solomon now turns his focus away from the striving and the chasing after the wind to a subject of friendship. Really much deeper than just a general friendship, but a true companionship. And in verse number 9 we read, "Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor." I can't read this verse really without the echo of Three Dog Night singing, "One is the loneliest number." That eerie kind of sounding song. Now it'll be stuck in your head the rest of the day, and it's better off being stuck there than in mine as it has been. But let's just face it, going through life without anyone stinks. It just stinks. Everybody is looking for someone to help make it through. And Solomon speaks of the greatest friends that we have in life. And understand, he's not necessarily speaking about a husband and a wife. And I know that often these verses get used in marriage ceremonies. And we'll talk about that maybe in a moment. But, you know, he's talking about the greatest of friends. But some people never marry, but yet they have a strong companionship with others in life. I think of Paul with Timothy and with Titus and or Luke. I think of Jonathan, David. I think of Ruth and Naomi. Strong bonds, strong relationships. Much of the success that we have in life and much of our failures are the result of the friends that we choose, whether they be good friends or whether they be bad. So with that in mind, we read verses 11 and 12. It says, "Again, if two lie together, then they have no heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if one prevail against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken." Solomon goes on to give two examples of how two are better than one, or gives a couple of examples anyway. And I want you to understand verse number 11 is not about having sexual relationships. It's about keeping someone warm. We live in a bit of a macho type of world, I guess you could say, where if two guys get too close together, they're thought of as being gay. But in much of the world, it's common to see two men holding each other around the shoulders and walking down the street, or giving each other hugs, even on the streets. Many of you all remember Heather's friend Maria from Serbia. And when she graduated from college, her parents came out to visit and spent some time with us. And I got all too familiar with a large man with his arm around my neck and more than willing to give me a kiss. Quite uncomfortable for me, but for them it was a constant thing of their culture. That was just what they did. And that's the kind of thing that Solomon is speaking about here. And, you know, that's one of the benefits. And of course, the benefits of a friend is to help shield you from the attacks of another. Might be physical attacks, it might be verbal attacks, but a friend has truly got your back. And we have here this threefold cord that is not quickly broken. And again, this is one of these three verses, they're often used in a marriage ceremony, and You know, we speak about the husband being one cord and a wife being another cord and God being the other cord. And truly, that is a threefold cord that is not easily broken. But that is not what Solomon is alluding to at all here. Remember, he is looking at life from the vantage point of being under the sun, apart from God. And that third cord is not speaking of God here. He's speaking this. You know, two friends are good, three is better. Three friends are even better than two. But one is the loneliest number. Let's move on to verse 13. Verse 13, as we enter our last section of verses here, says, "Better is a poor and a wise child than an old and foolish king who will no more be admonished." Solomon names no names here of who this king might be that he has in mind, if he has someone in particular in mind at all. But Solomon knew a lot of kings. He knew a lot of kings because he had a lot of father-in-laws that were kings. He knew his fair share. But he starts here with this section, that a child with wisdom is better than an old foolish king that no one respects. Now let's read on what happens. For out of prison he cometh to reign, whereas also he that is born in his kingdom becometh poor. So here we have this different guy. He's not the king. He's not the foolish king. Perhaps he's the wise child. But he's the one who is poor. He was seemingly in prison. And somehow out of prison, he came to power. And he came in power in such a way that the people rejoiced. They said, "Let's get rid of the old foolish king. This guy's wise. He's going to lead us. We're going to follow after the wise guy." But you know what happens when the wise guy comes to power? It's not very long before the people start to say, "Well, we don't like that new king either. We don't like him." And when they're not happy with the new king, who do they look to? The one who was the son of the old foolish king. Because he's the one that should be sitting on the throne. Verses 15 and 16 says, "And I consider all the living that walk, which walk under the sun, with the second child that shall stand up in his stead. There is no end of all the people, even all that have been before him. They also that come after shall not rejoice in him. Surely this is also vanity and vexation of spirit." So the second child is the foolish king's son. He will become the king and replace the wise one. And it won't be long before the foolish king's son who comes to power will come to an end because the people will say, "We don't want him either. We want someone new to lead us." All the striving, and the cycle repeats itself over and over. No lasting happiness under the sun. So that brings us to the end of the chapter, and we have to admit there's not a lot of happiness in this chapter at all outside of finding a real friend. It's the only thing you got under the sun. The best hope that you can have is a companion who's got your back. But let me say this before we end. Today, if you're going through life and you're striving and you're never fully attaining, if life just seems like a mess, if just seems like you wish you had never been born, let me ask you this. Are you living your life under the sun where there is no hope? Or are you living your life under heaven, under the power and authority of God? Solomon is teaching us again that life under the sun has no lasting value, no lasting happiness, only continual striving without comfort. And folks, I hope that isn't you today. I hope instead you're striving. It's for the kingdom that is coming with Christ as its head. There you'll find comfort. There you'll find rest. There you'll find hope in all your labor. And with that, we end today.